Welcome to the Anchored Hope Podcast. We're so glad that you gave us a download and that you're listening to our Sunday service. And we hope you have a great experience, but we hope even more that you join us on Sundays at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our website, www.anchoredhope.church.
We are starting a new series today called Signs. And for the next few weeks leading up to Easter, we're going to journey through the Gospel of John as he journeyed through Jesus. So really, this is kind of a study looking at John. But John is so fascinating. John has this outlook that he gives us that we can't really see anywhere else. And he took this account down at the end of his life. You know, we talked about this in our last series, the B-I-B-L-E. You know, these apostles that wrote the Gospels that give us the account of Jesus, they didn't get together and go, you know what, this would be a great opportunity for a book deal, you know? Okay, I'll tell this story and you tell that story. They wrote these stories at completely different times, totally apart from one another, and they wrote each of their accounts thinking that this might be the only account people had. And there was. There was a time and a period where all people had was the book of John. But John writes his account at the end of his life. And again, remember when we talk about this, just like we've said before, they didn't write it themselves. All of these people were very illiterate. I mean, they went through a lot to be able to take this account down. And they dictated it to somebody else, and they sat there and they wrote it. And then that person who wrote it probably took it to the people and read it out loud to people, because again, people could not write or read during this time. But he writes this at the end of his life, after most of his friends, Peter, Matthew, Luke, all of them were put to death, were actually martyred or crucified and killed. So he takes this account at the end of this life, but before we can even jump into it, there is a tension throughout this entire gospel that we have to address. And I think it's a tension that we even deal with in the church today. And perhaps the two most misunderstood and misused words in Christianity today are these right here: faith and belief. Faith and belief. Now, in the secular world, we know exactly what these two words mean. You put them in any other arena, you talk about them with anything else, we know exactly what these two words mean. Faith is this, right? Faith is complete trust or confidence in someone or something. I've put my trust in it. Now, why do I put my trust in it? I put my complete trust in it because I believe. And we all know what belief is. Belief is this. Belief is to accept something as true. And the reason I'm accepting something as true is because of the evidence that's presented to me. And even almost more important than the evidence presented to me is the person who's presenting the evidence. But because this person who I trust is presenting this evidence to me, I believe. I believe it's true. And when I believe it's true, it's easy for me to put my complete trust in it. It's easy for me to lean into it. It's easy for me to surrender to it. And that's what faith and belief mean. And the thing is we put our faith in something once we believe. I have faith in coffee, okay? Every morning when I wake up, the first thing I do, even if Kate asks me, you know, will you get the kids up? Could you help me get them dressed? Could you do? Yes, but first, coffee. Right? So I go and I make coffee. The first thing I do when I get here at the church is I go and I turn the lights on and I plug in the coffee maker because it's got to get brewing. It's got to get hot. And the first pot of coffee that's made here every Sunday is made by me. And I drink most of it myself because I believe there has been great scientific evidence that has proven to me, and I can testify myself, that coffee just makes me a happier person. Coffee is not just best for me, coffee is best for you. Me on coffee is good for you. And so I believe in coffee, and I have faith, I have trust that it is going to do what it needs. It is going to make me happy, it is going to make me regular, it is going to be great for my overall health in my life. And so I drink it, and I drink it black like a man. I drink it like a real coffee maker should, and I love it. I have faith in it because I believe in it. But for some reason, these two words get hijacked when it comes to our theology. all of a sudden these words take on a totally different meaning. And all of a sudden we eliminate reason and we insert hope. Do you know what I'm talking about? I mean, if you grew up in the church, if you've grown up around the church for a long time, we've taken these words, faith and belief, and all of a sudden turned them into these words that just kind of mean like, be hopeful. I mean, these are some of the sayings that we grew up hearing. We grew up hearing things like, well, you just got to believe. Or we were raised hearing things like, well, you just got to take it by faith. Just take it by faith. Or this is my absolute favorite. You need more faith. Which, seriously, doesn't even make sense. Right? You can't have more faith. You either have complete trust in it, that's what faith means, or you don't. You can't get more of it. You can't make more of it. You know, you need more faith. That doesn't even make sense. But in the church world, these are totally normal phrases. These are things we hear all the time. These are themes that constantly come up. And the thing is, herein lies the problem. I think with a lot of this, what we're telling people is, well, you just got to believe. You just got to know that it's real. Okay, well, you told me the same thing about Santa Claus and Tooth Fairy, Mom and Dad. So where are we at here? I just got to believe? Well, you just need to have more faith. Well, how do I make more of it? Pray more? I don't know. You just need more of it. Go to church more often. Maybe we need a revival. I don't know. Just buy some more. I mean, none of it makes any sense and none of it goes anywhere, but this is what we tell people to do. This is what we grew up on. And when you struggle, when you don't have faith, when you're having a hard time believing, there are no answers. And you're almost downgraded, looked down on, and told, well, you just don't have enough faith. Well, you just don't believe. That's your problem. You know, it's like Tinkerbell. You just need to believe. It's like Peter Pan. You just need to believe, 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 and it suddenly happens. But it's not the way it feels. And it's not the way it works. And I read a really interesting quote by Frank Turek. And Frank Turek puts it this way. He says, the reason so many people are so easily talked out of Christianity is because they were never talked into it into the first place. They were never talked into it. And so it's very, very easy to get talked out of it. Because how many of us grew up in church? How many of us grew up being religious? And we believed. Just simply because our parents believed, or simply because this is what we did every single week, or because, you know, we had that one Sunday school teacher, or we had that one pastor, or we had that one youth pastor, and we believed them, we believed the evidence, not so much because of the evidence, but because of the person who was telling us. And so we just believed. We just took it by faith. We just did it because of faith. But then we heard a podcast, or then we read a book, or then we read a speaker, or then somebody questioned us and asked us, so let me ask you about this. Let me pull this out of the Bible. Let me pull this out of the Old Testament. Is this what you're down with? Is this what you're cool with? Well, help me explain this. And we were like, hold on. I got to take this back to my youth pastor. And then, so then we went back, and we're like, so what's up with this? I don't understand this. And they're just like, well, you just got to believe. Just take it by faith, brother. Just you got to have more faith. Don't let them, you know, tear down your faith. You better go get some more of it. And it's so easy. So easy. This is why so many young people leave the faith in their college years. And in this great gap between 18 and 24, there's this enlightenment. There's this opportunity to have conversations, to start to think about this. And all of a sudden, for the first time in our life sometimes, we think about it for ourselves and we go, hold on a minute. This does feel a lot like Santa Claus. This does feel a lot like the Tooth Fairy. Where is this coming from? Where is the evidence? Where is the proof? I mean, I don't know about all of this. And I don't know because as I see it fleshed out, I don't see it fleshed out in the way that it says here. And all of a sudden, we're talked out of it. All of a sudden, we're unsure. All of a sudden, we have a lot more questions than answers. We're told to believe, so we do. But then all of a sudden, we're talked out of it. And here's what we're going to see in this series. We're going to see in this series that it's so much more than that. But we're also going to see in this series that there's a big difference between by faith and because of faith. There's a huge difference between these two things, these two ideas. There's a big difference between by faith and because of faith. And what we're going to see specifically in the Gospel of John is John would tell you, when I decided to follow Jesus, it was not because of my faith. When I decided to join him, when I decided to believe that he was the Son of God, that he was the Messiah, that when he died on the cross, he had died for my sins, it was not because of faith. It was because of evidence that I saw and I believed in. And I put my faith in Jesus, and I walked by faith in Jesus because of what I believed, because of the signs that I saw. And so John, when he writes this gospel, when he begins to break this down for us, and in all the gospels, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, we see this incredible struggle upon the apostles. You know, we look at the apostles now as like these saints, these good old boys who were just, you know, the perfect first church board. But it's the exact opposite. You look through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and really look at the entire story and read it from the beginning to the end with your own eyes. You see these men who, number one, were invited to follow Jesus before they believed. I've said this before and I'll say it again. With Jesus, you were invited to belong before you believed. And that's exactly what happened. They were invited to belong, and so they came with Jesus way before they believed. And then throughout the Gospels, all you see is these men who believe and then all of a sudden doubt. Who believe and all of a sudden are nowhere to be found. Who believe and then all of a sudden leave Jesus in his greatest hour. Who believe and then are hiding because they believe that Jesus wasn't real and that when he was dead, he was dead. So here's the thing, if you're struggling to believe, if you're struggling to believe that the evidence is true, that God is real, that Jesus is who he says he was, then here's the thing, you're not alone. Because even the first, even the apostles went through this. Even the apostles struggled. And the thing that I want to accomplish through this is that I want to help you believe. I want to talk you into what you were never really talked into. And I want to talk you into it so that you never get talked out of it again. And I want to talk you into it so that when others ask you a question, you can talk them into it. Because it's so much better than because of faith. It's so much better and it makes so much more sense. And there's so much reason there instead of you just got to believe or you just got to take it by faith. And John, He writes kind of the thesis for his account, kind of the conclusion at the very end of why he wrote what he wrote. And at the very end of his gospel in John 20, this is what he says. In John 20, he goes, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples. It said, these aren't the only ones that happened. There were many more, but these are the ones that I saw with my own eyes, which are not recorded in this book. But these were written. These were written. Why were these written? Why were these put down? Why were these shared with anybody? So that you may believe. Believe what, John? What is it you want us to believe? Believe that Jesus is the Messiah. That he is the Son of God. And that when you believe, by believing, that you may have life in his name. He says, this is why I wrote all this down. He doesn't begin with, I put my faith in Jesus, and I hope you do too. That's not how he starts his gospel. He says it's way better than that. He says Jesus performed many signs, and I've written them down for a purpose. I am building a case for you to believe that Jesus is who he says he was. In other words, the sequence that brought him to have faith was this. He walked by faith because there were events that happened, and they were signs that pointed to who Jesus was. And they served as evidence so that we would believe that he is who he says he is, so that we can trust in his name. He says, this is how I got there. And this is how I want to outline this. I want to show you these events that were signs that pointed to him. I want to help you understand this. Now, here's what's so interesting, and this is what we're going to go over the next 7 weeks. When he says signs, he's talking about the miracles of Jesus. So when he starts out, he takes us through these seven miracles that Jesus performed. But he doesn't call them miracles. He calls them signs. Because what does a sign do? It points you in the right direction, right? And he goes, these weren't just miracles. These weren't just Jesus being nice. This wasn't Jesus showing off. This wasn't Jesus going, look at me, I got powers. No, the whole intention of the miracle was that it would be a sign that would point people to Jesus so that they would believe in him, so that they could put their faith or trust in him. These weren't just miracles. These weren't just supernatural events. They were signs, and they were purposefully thought out. And you know, this is so important. We've got to stop and talk about this for a second. You know, we get so wrapped up, so concerned so many times with miracles. We almost disrespectfully use the word now, miracle. And we pray for miracles. We ask God for miracles. Well, I just hope God performs a miracle. I just need a miracle. God, will you do this for me? And we're asking God to do something miraculous for us, to do something almost supernatural for us. But here's what we're getting wrong. Jesus back then and Jesus now is not like a genie in the bottle, okay? He's not like your fairy godmother that you just ask to, and because he likes you, he goes, oh, sure, you want me to perform a miracle? Well, of course, why wouldn't I? I'm a nice guy, and I'd love to treat you. I'd love to bless you. Let me perform that miracle for you. No problem. No, 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 no. The whole purpose behind a miracle is that it would be a sign, that it would point other people to Jesus. It's not so much about the person that the miracle is happening to. It's about the people who are viewing the miracle and how it can point them to Jesus. So we've got to stop asking for miracles like it's just Jesus doing something wondrous for us. That's not the point of a miracle. You're missing the point. The point of a miracle is that it would be a sign. I'll put it this way, right? The supernatural acts of Jesus. The supernatural acts of Jesus, the walking on water, the healing people, the bringing people back to life. These were signs that pointed to something. And that pointed to something was who Jesus was. So this is so important. He doesn't want us to be enamored. He doesn't want us to be enamored with the miraculous. Instead, he wants us to get enamored with who the miraculous points to. Don't get so hung up. Don't get so enamored. Don't get so starstruck over the miracles. Get enamored. Get starstruck by who the miracle points to. And that is Jesus. That is who it's all about. So, sign number one. This is what we're going to do. Today we're going to get into sign number one. Sign number one is one that we all know. And actually, it was even so well known back then. By the time John wrote his account and wrote his gospel down, he didn't even tell us really what it was. He didn't like name it. He didn't say, so sign number one was water to wine. He doesn't do that because this story was so well known as the first miracle of Jesus that it had been shared so many times that John was just kind of like, you guys, you know the one where Jesus, it's kind of like a joke that everybody knows, you know? Like, you guys know the one where Jesus shows up at a wedding and he does the thing with the water and wine? Yeah, this one. Let me talk about this one, right? So he doesn't actually ever come out and say, this is exactly what happened and this is the title of it. He just kind of gives us a summary of it. But the very first sign is this, water to wine. The first sign is water to wine. This is the only one that's going to rhyme, okay? I can't make the others rhyme. I tried my best, but it's not going to happen. But the first sign is water to wine. And in the second chapter of John's account, this is what he tells us. John 2:1. It says, on the third day, a wedding took place at Cana of Galilee. And Jesus' mother was there. And Jesus and his disciples had been invited to the wedding as well. So the first thing we know, and we're setting this up, there's a wedding taking place. And we all know back then that weddings took a long time back then. There was like a week-long celebration. It was a long, long thing. And Jesus' mother, Mary, was there. And so Jesus' mother, Mary, was there, and she was, I don't know, maybe friends, but she was involved pretty heavily with the catering. Maybe she was working. Maybe she was a caterer herself. Maybe she was a party hostess. We don't really know. But Jesus' mother was there, and somehow, maybe because Jesus' mother was there, Jesus got an invite. And everywhere Jesus went, here came his posse. So they're kind of like wedding crashers in a way, okay? So all these guys who just kind of met each other and just kind of getting familiar with each other, they get invited to this wedding. So Jesus brings all of his homeboys, his whole crew, and he shows up at this wedding. And so then they're having this wedding, and then this is what happens next. It goes on to the next verse, and it says, when the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. So again, weddings took a long, long time, right? Weddings went on for weeks, and so all of a sudden, this is probably maybe in the middle of the wedding, and all of a sudden, they're out of wine, which was a pretty big deal back then. I mean, this would be like if you ran out of cake, and we're like, we have no more cake. We have a lot more guests, but we have no more cake. For me, the catastrophe for you would be, I had shrimp at my wedding. This would be like if they're like, we have no more shrimp. I'd be like, oh my goodness, this is a catastrophe. I can't go through this anymore. But they ran out. And so Jesus' mother turns to him, and she said, when the wine was gone, Mary turned to Jesus, and she said, they have no more wine. Now, this is very, very interesting. Because what this tells us is that something took place. Something took place in the life of Jesus and Mary. You know, Jesus started his ministry about 30 years old, and it lasted for, about 2 to 3 years. And so Jesus is a 30-year-old, so he's a little bit younger than me. That's weird. I'm older than Jesus. Anyway, but she runs to him, and something has happened in her life that she knows that, oh, we ran out of wine, and Jesus can do something about it. Which makes you wonder what she saw growing up with him. You know what I mean? Like, one day was she like making brownies and she ran out of eggs and was like, oh my goodness, we're out of eggs. And Jesus was just like, no problem, Mom. And just kept cracking the same egg over and over again and was like, Mom, how many do you need? I can crack this all day. And she was like, oh, you're amazing. That was so worth it in the whole Bethlehem and manger thing. This is awesome, you know? Something had to have happened. She witnessed something. Because, I mean, she knew. So, I mean, maybe they never went shopping for milk. Or, maybe Jesus just opened the fridge and was like, oh, we're out of milk, Mom? Ha-ha! No, we're not. What else do you want? Aha! But she knew. She could turn to him and he can make something happen. That he was resourceful. So this is where it gets even better. Then, this is what Jesus' response was. He says, woman! Woman! Why do you involve me? Now, hold on just a minute. In the English, this is the right translation, okay? But if you looked at the Greek, it's not as disrespectful as it sounds, okay? It's actually, the Greek word that he uses is a term of respect, okay? So really, if it was translated how we would understand it and not think Jesus was mean, that it would say, ma'am, why do you involve me? Which is kind of funny, right? Because here's what happened. Jesus has got all of his homeboys there. He's a young 30-year-old guy. And his mom walks up to him. She goes, they're out of wine. Fix it. And he's there in front of all of his guys. And he's like, Mom, you're embarrassing me in front of my friends. But he can't do that. So he's like, excuse me, ma'am. why do you involve me with this? And he says to her, my hour has not yet come. Which what he was telling her is, Mom, this is not the first miracle I'm supposed to perform, okay? There's a little boy in a couple days, he can't walk. I'm supposed to heal his legs. It's going to be awesome. My first miracle that I perform is not going to be at a wedding. And it's not going to be with wine. Christians are going to use this for thousands of years as an excuse to drink. I can't do this at a wedding with alcohol involved. They're going to go, and Jesus drank, he turned water into wine, and it's going to go really, really wrong. My hour has not come. I cannot do this. Will you please go away? You're embarrassing me. But that's not what he does. That's how I envision. This is how I read the Bible. This is reading the Bible with Mike, okay? But anyway, he says, my hour has not yet come. I can't do this. Why are you involving me? And she says, she turns to the servants and says, do whatever he tells you, which is such a mom move. You know what I mean? Jesus is like, come on, Mom, I can't do this. And she just goes, do it. You too. Do what he says. Fix it. I'm over. You know? And she just walks off like a mom does, like a boss. Mary was a boss, man. She was like, just take care of it. Do what he says. I'll spank you. I don't care how old you are. I don't care if you're the son of God. You came out of my womb and I'll put you back in your place. So Jesus is in this situation. He's like, all right, I guess this is the first miracle, I guess this is what we're going to do. Fine. But here's what's so interesting about this, okay? Then everything kind of turns. Because the apostles are watching this, and John probably, everybody was probably picking up on, this is not what Jesus wants to do. This is not a great first miracle. This is not as miraculous as the other ones are going to be. This is almost like a party trick. So they could have just not told us this one, John could have just said, yeah, let's start with the little kid who couldn't walk. That was the first miracle, not that other thing. But he decides to use it. And he decides to use it because something so powerful happens here. And the comments that it gets are even more powerful. And they are a sign that help us believe that Jesus was who he says he was. Because what happens next is incredible. So Jesus is like, well, I'm going to make the best of this. And so this is what happens next. The scriptures tell us this. Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. So this is what Jesus does. Jesus goes, all right, got to make this work. So he sees these stone jars over there. Now these stone jars, like it says, were used for the ceremonial washing of Jews. This was a part of the Old Covenant. This was very Old Testament. They had these water jars that would hold all of this water, and there was a system, there was a ceremonial cleansing that everybody had to go through in order to wash themselves. So they were very Old Covenant, they were very Old Testament, and they were used for this purpose. And they were icons. They were icons of the Old Covenant. That was their use, and that was their purpose, and they were in place. So Jesus is looking around, and he goes, okay, what are we going to do? And he goes, oh, I got something good. So he takes this Old Covenant, Old Testament tool, and he goes, hey, yeah, bring those over here. I'm going to use those things, right? And so he tells them to bring them over there. And then this is what happens next. Jesus decided to use something in place as a sign of what he was coming to replace. This is what's so beautiful about Jesus when he decides to take these. He goes, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to show people exactly what I have come to do. I have come to bring something new. I am replacing the old with something new. And so I am literally in front of everybody going to take this ceremonial, special thing of their Old Testament, of Old Covenant ways, and I'm going to use it at a party. I'm going to take something so fancy like their sanctuary. I'm going to take something so fancy like their hymns, and I'm going to turn them upside down, and I'm going to make them fun. I'm going to put alcohol in them. That's going to be hilarious. I'm going to take their old stuff, and I'm going to do something new with it. But then I'm going to do something so new, it's going to be great. Everybody's going to love it. And so he takes this old tool, and he decides to replace it. In the same way he was telling people, I have come to take the old and I have come to replace it with something new. F.F. Bruce, he wrote this beautiful quote. He's a theologian and a pastor, and he wrote this. He said, the water provided for purification as laid down by Jewish law and custom stands for the whole ancient order of Jewish ceremony, which Christ was to replace with something better. I have come to replace it with something better. And then in verse 7, this is what John tells us. So Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water so they're filled to the brim. And then he told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. And so they did so. So they do that everything that Jesus tells them. And then they take it to the master of the banquet. This was like, you ever watch Master Chef with Gordon Ramsay? And they go and they work in the restaurant at a certain point, you know? And they're working in the restaurant and they make the food and they plate it and stuff. And then they bring it to the window and Gordon Ramsay, he's the master chef, and he checks it, you know? And this is the fun part of the episode because he like tells them they're like an idiot sandwich or, you know, tells them they screwed it up. And so this is like what this is like. Before the food goes out, before the alcohol goes out, before anything goes, it's got to go through the master of the banquet. So they say, take it to the master of the banquet. Let him check it. And so they do. So it goes to the master of the banquet, and then this is what happens. So the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. Again, John doesn't even tell us in here, and then it turned into wine. Everybody knows this story, so he just goes, you know how it goes. It had turned into wine. And he did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water did. So the servants knew exactly what had happened. They were witnesses to this, and they were behind the whole thing. But the master of the banquet, he had no clue. Then he called the bridegroom aside. Now, this is the most amazing part of this, okay? And I've never preached on this verse. In 500 sermons, I've never preached on this verse because I didn't think there was really anything there. But then there's some. What happens next? This is the it. This is so powerful. And if you're having troubles believing in Jesus, this is an aha moment right here. This is so beautiful. Then this is what he says. He turns to the bride and the groom. He goes, everyone brings out the choice wine first. And then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. So if you've never had a party with alcohol involved, apparently this is what you do. The good stuff comes out first, then once everybody gets a little drunk, you bring out the cheaper stuff, okay? Because they don't care, because they're drunk. Anyway, I didn't know if that needed explaining or not. Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper stuff starts to come out. But you have saved the best till now. It was the best stuff he had ever tasted. It was the sweetest stuff he had ever tasted. It was the most full wine he had ever tasted. Now, two reasons why I think John told us this. Two reasons why I think John said, oh no, this is the perfect first miracle. This is the perfect first sign in order to point people to Jesus. This was so good because this was a sign of what God was coming to bring to the people. He was coming to bring the best. He was telling them, you know, the old covenant, it was ahead of its time, and it was great, but it was temporary. It was a means to an end, and the end is here. This is the finale, and this is better. This is better. What I started with the Israelites, what I started with the Jews, was temporary to get us to this point, and now I am coming to give you something better. I am giving you something that is best for you. I'm giving this for the best of your interest. I'm giving this for the best of the intentions that I have. This is better, and this is for everybody. This is not just for the Jews, but for the Gentiles. Not just for the slave owners, but the slaves. This is for everybody, and this is the best I could give you. And I'm coming to replace what I put in place with something better. So here it comes. Here is my son. Here is what he is coming to give. He was coming to take the old covenant out and put the new covenant into place. But it gets even better than that. Because when I was reading this and I was studying this and I was looking ahead, I said, you know what this means for us though now? What this means for us is that with Jesus, the best is yet to come as well. You know, in our life, your and I's life, you know, we always talk about the good old days. You know, we always talk about like when we were younger or when I was in my prime. And we kind of look at like age as like a degrading process, right? Like you'll get to a point where in your life where people will ask you, you know, when you're younger, like, how old are you? I'm 16. You know, you ask any of the teenagers how old they are. They'll tell you. They're proud. They'll puff their chest out. Like, I'm 18. I have one hair. This is great. Check this out. I'm a man, basically, right? I am a man. Look out, right? We're like that in our 20s, too. Like, how old are you? I'm 21. I'm like an adult on steroids, right? I'm 25. Then we get to like 30, and we're like, how old are you? I'm 30. Things hurt when I wake up, right? And then we turn 40, and it's like everything hurts when I wake up. I have trouble. Then we get older, and it's like, how old are you? I don't want to say. I don't want to say, you know? And then, you know, we get to the age and they're like, are you a grandma? No, I'm not a grandma. I'm Grammy. It's cooler than grandma. I'm not a grandma, though. Is that a white hair? No, I think. You know, it starts to get degrading. And we're like, oh, back in the old days, back when it was good, back when I was younger, back when I was in my prime, right? We're almost embarrassed by our age. We're almost embarrassed by the life we've lived. But here's the thing, and here's what's so good. And how we look at life as something that just gets cheaper, something that gets less valuable. Jesus is saying to us, with me, the best is yet to come. With me, your life will only get fuller. Your life will only get sweeter. Your life will only get richer. Your life will only get more valuable. I shared this story last week. Kate's grandfather died. And I shared this story with the family, and they wanted Kate to read a scripture verse. And I said, here, read this one. But I told her, I said, don't just read the verse. Do it the Davis way. And she did great. She got up at her grandfather's funeral, and I gave her this verse, and I helped her write it. And we did it the very Davis way. She didn't say, John, the book in the Bible says. She said, you know, John was there when Jesus did something. And John wrote this account down, and she did a great job with it. But the whole point of it was her grandfather, he lived this very, very full life.
where the business that he started, he didn't start until he was almost 65. He did incredible things later in his life that brought the entire family together. And now, all of Kate's uncles and aunts, they all live in Topeka, and the entire family is involved in this business that her grandfather started at 65. How ambitious to do at 65. But the point of her sharing that verse at his funeral was to explain to people that the reason he had that much hope, the reason he had that much drive in his life, was because he was a follower of Jesus, because he believed that this was what he was called to do, what he was supposed to do. You know, another story that I didn't connect together until I started to work on this, but you know, we had the affordable Christmas shop at Christmas, and Penny and Randy Freeborn, they've been coming to our church, you know, for a few months now, but I've known Penny for 17 years, and she's Pastor Carrie's mom. And so, you know, Penny helped at Trunk or Treat, and then she helped at the Affordable Christmas Shop, and at the Affordable Christmas Shop, she was wrapping presents and stuff, and Penny came up to me afterwards, and she said, "You know what?" She said, "At my age, I have grown up in church for a long time, but being a part of this stuff that we are doing in the community, I have never felt more used for the kingdom of God. In all my years of being in church, who would have thought that somebody my age would be able to have such an impact on my community for the kingdom of God?" And then I read this verse and I said, that's it. That's what this verse means. That's what this is all about. Is Jesus is making a very clear sign to whomever shall believe in him, whomever shall walk with him by faith, whoever puts their trust in him, the promise that he's making us, what he's trying to communicate to us is like, look, with me, life doesn't get cheaper, life doesn't get stale, it doesn't get less valuable, it only gets more valuable. With me, I want to tell you that the best is yet to come. With me, I'm telling you, I've got so many plans for you. I've got so many purposes for your life that your life will not degrade. It will only get more precious. It will only get more valuable. It will only bring more light to the world. So if you follow me, I'm making you a promise. I'm telling you right now, this is what I want to do in your life. And John, when he wraps up this gospel, he says it this way. He says, then, what Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. Why did his disciples believe in him? Why did they choose to put their faith in him and trust him with their life? Because of what they saw. Because of the signs that were in front of him when Jesus, right then and there, revealed his glory. Here's the thing for you. The reason they believed was because there was a reason to believe. There was a miracle. There was a sign. And here's the thing. Maybe this is the sign that you need. Maybe for you right now, God was saying to you, look, I want you to understand this happened. You know, we didn't see this with our own eyes, but we can see because of the person telling us, John the Apostle, how honest he's being. How honest he's being about what they saw and what they witnessed. We can look at what John said, and we can look at it as a sign. We can take it as true, as evidence, and put our faith in it. And maybe, you know what, maybe what God is trying to say to you right now is, look, this is your sign. This is what I want you to understand. This is real. It happened. It's not a fairy tale. It's not made up. It's not just a fairy tale that your parents told you or your Sunday school teacher told you. This is all true and this is real and it really happened. And what Jesus is trying to tell you right now is that if you put your trust in me, if you believe in me, I will make your life so sweet. I will make your life so full that when people get a taste of you, they will go, ooh, that is awesome. Where did you get that from? That's what he wants to do in your life. That's what he wants to bring about in your life. And before this series is over, my prayer is that you would believe. That you would believe and that you would put your faith in Jesus. But not because you just believed, not because you took it by faith, but because you believed John. Because you believed in what he saw and you would believe that it was true. If you were talked out of Christianity, or if you know somebody who was talked out of Christianity, maybe it's because you were never talked into it. Maybe it's because you were never told the signs. Maybe it's because you were never given the proof. That instead, the proof, the Bible, was used for a totally different purpose in your life. And I'm sorry that happened to you. I'm sorry somebody did that. Somebody was very irresponsible with that, and they should have never done that. And they should have never made you feel that way. But our hope is that we could talk you back into it. Jesus is here to offer you something new, to transform your life into something better. So would you consider, just consider, letting go of your old life? Would you consider allowing him to do something new in you? And just how he transformed that water into wine, let him transform your life into something better. Let me pray for you this morning. God, this morning, I pray that this morning, if there's anybody struggling, if there's anybody this morning who has been talked out of Christianity, who is struggling to believe, God, I pray that this morning you would have this be a sign for us, that God, we would believe, that we wouldn't just take it by faith, or we wouldn't just believe for any old reason, but that God, we would believe because we believe it's true, that we would trust in the words of John, that we would believe that John was there and John saw this, and that God, you did reveal your glory through Jesus Christ. God, would you help us to do that this morning? Would you help us to have faith because of what we believe? And God, this morning, would you help us to put our trust in you? Because God, we believe this morning that just as John told us, that through you, our life would be better. That you have better in mind for us. That God, through you, we would be transformed and we would be renewed. That you would give us a life that doesn't get stale or isn't degraded, but that would only get sweeter, that would only get more full, that would only become more valuable, that our life would be a life full of purpose. God, that's why I think every single one of us, we are looking for. But God, we cannot do it without you. You are the vine and you are the source. And so God, this morning, we turn to you. God, we humbly ask for your help. This Lenten season is a time for us to recognize our need for you. And so, God, we do that this morning. We need you. We needed your sacrifice. We needed your resurrection. And we need it today again. So, God, would you bring it to light? Would you use it to transform us? In your name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to Anchored Hope Church. We would love it if you hit the subscribe button and even give us a review, and plan your visit to Anchored Hope Church at 211 Boone Street at www.anchoredhope.church.